ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय भगवान अभिभारत तद रूपानी तरहना शुक्ता वाखेना तीतरम उदिता गुना गुणावतार सुजाया प्रियव्रतम आदि पुरुषस्थम सद्यया हशस्वलोका इति उवाचा. My dear king, because Lord Brahma had finally descended from Satyaloka to Bhuloka, Narad Muni, Prince Priyavrata, and Swayambhuva Manu came forward to offer him objects of worship and praise him in highly qualified language. According to Vedic etiquette, at that time Lord Brahma, the original person of the universe, felt compassion for Priyavrata and, looking upon him with a smiling face, spoke to him as follows. Purport. That Lord Brahma descended from Satyaloka to see Priyavrata indicates that the matter was very serious. Narad Muni had come to advise Priyavrata about the value of spiritual life, knowledge, renunciation, and bhakti. And Lord Brahma knew that Narada's instructions were very impressive. Therefore, unless Lord Brahma personally went to Gandamandana Hill to request Priyavrata, Lord Brahma knew that Prince Priyavrata would not accept his father's order. Brahma's purpose was to break Priyavrata's determination. Therefore, Brahma first looked upon Priyavrata with compassion. His smile and compassionate features also indicated that although Brahma would request Priyavrata to accept household life, Priyavrata would not be out of touch with devotional service. By the blessings of a Vaishnava, everything is possible. This is described in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu as Kripa Siddhi, or perfection attained simply by the blessings of a superior person. One usually becomes liberated and perfect by executing the regulative principles set down in the Shastras. Nonetheless, many persons have achieved perfection simply by the blessings of a spiritual master or superior. Priyavrata was the grandson of Lord Brahma, and as joking competition sometimes takes place between grandson and grandfather, in this case also Priyavrata was determined to remain in meditation, whereas Brahma was determined that he rule the universe. Thus Lord Brahma's affectionate smile and glance meant, "My dear Priyavrata, you have decided not to accept household life, but I have decided to convince you that you must accept it." Actually, Brahma had come to praise Priyavrata for his high standard of renunciation, austerity, penance, and devotion, so that he would not be deviated from devotional service, even though he would accept household life. In this verse, one important word is shukta vakena by Vedic hymns. In the Vedas, there is the following prayer to Lord Brahma: Hiranya Bharabha Samabhar Tathagre Bhutasya Jata Patireka Asita. Brahma was received with the appropriate Vedic hymns, and because he was welcomed according to the Vedic etiquette, he was very pleased. So we see here the importance, or the balance, you could say, of the importance between form, function, and the attitude. So, the Vedic literatures, this is their definition, this is what they're trying to define, is what is the proper attitude, what's the proper goals, and what forms and endeavors are used to obtain that. So the here we see is that Brahma had, you know, many things are happening here. Brahma is pleased because of the dealings that Narad Muni, Priyavrata, and Swayambhuva Manu are, how they're interacting. So this interaction is considered nice, proper. The tradition is there. Right? Because the tradition has the element of the practicalness of that it works. Right? It works. You know that it functions in the right way. Because it's been done in the past by persons who know what they're doing. And so they're using these activities. That's what's known as tradition. So tradition is the activities of authority following their authority. Right? That's tradition. So, but in here we see is that it's not just the form. See, the difficulty comes is that tradition is taken just as form or a particular endeavor. Well, without attitude, it won't come out properly, right? Attitude is what creates the inspiration. Attitude is what defines what your goal is. Right? Let us say I'm performing a proper activity. Let's say I'm worshiping the deity. And I'm doing it according to the shastras, according to tradition. Now, the situation is proper, right? The form is right, the function is correct. But now, depending upon my attitude, it will actually define what actually my real goal is. So if my attitude is, you know, everybody should see how special I am, you know, how good I am at this, how proper I am. What's the goal? It's not to please Krishna, it's a social element. With the attitude, I'm servant of Krishna, so therefore, under the direction of the spiritual master and the previous acharyas, we're worshipping the deity to please the deity. Then you have that element of devotion. Does that make sense? So the whole point where tradition is appreciated or tradition is not appreciated, it's all based on the attitude. The attitude's correct, it's appreciated. Why wouldn't it be appreciated? It works. But if the attitude's wrong, then all you have is the form, so actually the goal of the tradition is not obtained. So technically speaking, you're not following tradition. Because tradition is there to accomplish a certain goal. That goal is gained, then you can say that is tradition. Because the point is Narad Muni, Brahma, Swayambhuva, you know, all the great personalities, they have a particular purpose they're trying to obtain. Having that purpose, we see the attitude is right, the forms and endeavors are right. Now if we say, yes, I'm doing as they do, I'm offering the Vedic prayers and mantras, nice, but is your purpose the same as theirs? If it is, then you can say, that's tradition. Otherwise, if you only take half of it, that's not exactly tradition. Does that make sense? So much of the time, something that's performed in the name of tradition is not actually tradition. The form and function is, yes, but the goal is not gained, therefore there's no satisfaction. And people think this is old, this is archaic, this is, you know, irrelevant, or it's, you know, they're very proud or elitist. All these different concepts come up. But if the attitude's right, that doesn't come. So, but the reaction to it is this, oh, this is wrong, so therefore we're trying to, we change the mood and we leave the form and function. So even if, even let's say you had the right attitude, how will you express it? Because the point is forgetting that specific goal, that is the activity that gets it. right? Does that make sense? The person, let's say, the person comes into the kitchen, right? And he's seen people use the blender, and he's, you know, so he's really into the rules and regulations, so he gets it out, he does this and that, but he doesn't actually know what it's for. So he just gets out the machine, you know, like that, turns the buttons, all that, looks very, you know, superior and very, you know, formal. Does that make sense? So people say, oh, you know, this is not getting anything done. So then we will change it where we'll throw out the blender. And now we'll get things blended. I change the mood, I do whatever I like, I'm free. Right? Does it gain anything? No. The point is if something's wrong, you change what's wrong, not throw out what's right. Right? The form and function is right, the attitude's wrong. So therefore, he doesn't actually know the goal. So 2 out of 4 things are correct. Right? So add the other 2 that are correct. Don't throw out the 2 that are. Right? The parts missing, add that. Don't throw out what's useful. Does that make sense? So that's the difficulty that comes up. So Brahma is very pleased here because they're using the Vedic tradition, the hymns, but being Brahma, he knows the purpose, right? He's the one who's heard the Chatur Shloki, that this is the purpose of the Vedas, right? So therefore he knows what is the actual point, right? So him being pleased means the attitude is right here. Otherwise he wouldn't be pleased. Because right? Who's going to chant Vedic mantras better than him? Right? No one's going to, I mean, of course, Krishna, but he's going to have it right. So, therefore, it's a matter of the attitude's right, that's what's appreciated. Then, to that degree that you can make the form and function correct, according to your ability, according to your skill, then it just makes it better. Right? The attitude's correct, and the skill is less, it's still nice. And if the attitude's correct and the skill is greater, even better. Right? If someone leads a kirtan, they're technically not very fancy, but the attitude's nice, everyone appreciates. Now if someone can sing very nicely, has a very sweet voice, and has the right attitude, better. Does that make sense? So Brahma is very pleased here. So that means it's been done properly. All the elements are there. The form is there. The attitude is there. The endeavor is proper. The goal is understood. So all those things together, then that's Vedic. That's tradition. Right? But otherwise, you can't give part of it and then apply it, and when it doesn't work right, then say, no, but it's traditional. It has to work. That means it has to be the understanding, the knowledge. The knowledge is there, therefore the proper goal is understood, right? The proper method is understood, and the attitude is correct. When all that's there, then you can say, this is following in the footsteps. Otherwise, it just doesn't work. It doesn't work in any sphere. Even in the modern sphere, it doesn't work. Right? It just doesn't work. So, the point is here is that these personalities have done it right. So now this is the key point that is coming up here. I mean, this is a major point. And then its application is Priyavrata Maharaj has been doing these austerities. Right? A little bit mentioned here. Right? Renunciation, austerity, penance, devotion. And Narad Muni has been talking about the value of spiritual life, knowledge, renunciation, and bhakti. So these have been the practices. So the forms are correct. The attitudes are correct. But where it's being applied It's in the form of renunciation. Well, Brahma wants it to be in the form of household life. These qualities don't change. The renunciation, the knowledge, the bhakti, the austerity, none of that changes. In the Vedic system, for those who know, in other words, those who establish tradition, the great, the ancients, the great acharyas, the sages, then they have all these in place. So it's just a matter of which is the appropriate situation for them to apply it in grihastha life or apply it not in grihastha life. That's all. Because the Vedic system is only for worshiping the Supreme Lord. That's all it's for. People misuse it, right? People misuse it, right? Just like, let's say you have a game. It's just something to pass the time. But some people take it very seriously. They make an occupation out of the game. Right? Someone's occupation is kicking a ball around with their feet. You know what I'm saying? That's all they think about all day. Right? So all their energy is in their feet. Right? You know, it's not very elevated consciousness, whatever. But the point is they make an occupation out of something that's just supposed to be fun. Right? And those in the know, they don't mind. He's made an occupation out of it. Therefore, I don't have to get sweaty. I can just watch him get sweaty and I can pass the time. So it works. You understand? So the Vedic culture has a purpose, and that's to be Krishna conscious, whatever situation you're in. That's all it's for. It's not for anything else. But people take parts of it and overemphasize them. Right? So they overemphasize, then you get karma, and you get jnana, and you get yoga. You get all these different aspects that they're overemphasizing some aspect. Because in the Vedic culture, it doesn't matter where you're situated. It's just a matter of whether you're dealing with a wider range of elements to apply your spiritual life, knowledge, renunciation, and bhakti on, or a more narrow. That's all. Well, how broad or narrow it is. For the brahmacharis, it's narrow. For the grihasthas, it's very broad. But the principle is the same. You're using it in the same way. It's all for Krishna. So now Brahma's coming to try to convince them to apply this in grihastha life. Because it's broader, it's more difficult. Right? And so he who's comfortable in this simpler situation, then why go to the trouble? If you're satisfied with something simple, why arrange something elaborate if you don't require it? Right? So Brahma's point is he knows he doesn't require it, but the universe requires it. That's why he's come. The universe needs management. Right? And since management is dealing with this wide range of things, therefore, the grihastha deals with a wide range of things. It's natural for them to deal in that area. Right? Because it's actually very easy. Right? It's based on the principle is if you can hold a marriage together, you can manage an empire. Right? Managing the empire is the easier part. Right? You know what's there. Right? It's right there in front of you. Though there is the elements that it's natural. Okay, the feminine nature is contrary, elusive, and shy. These are three inherent qualities that just don't go away. Right? So then your kingdom is like that also. Right? It's contrary. Whatever you want to get done, somebody else has a different idea. It's elusive because the political, you can't tell what's going on. And it's shy because you're the big guy. No one wants to come forward and tell you, you know, you look like an idiot. You know? So, like that. Does that make sense? But because you're dealing, it's doesn't have the intensity like that. So the household life is more intense than managing the kingdom. Like that. So therefore, it'll be very easy for him. If he's a householder, he'll be able to manage the universe. Like that. That's why it's recommended. Because you're already doing it. It's like the adage, if you want to get something done, you find a busy person. right? The lazy person doesn't do anything. But the busy person, you can add to that. So the grihasthi is already busy. So you can add to that managing the universe. It fits in, right? Because he's already in that attitude, right? And in fact, it even enhances, because then the wife will be even more pleased, right? You're emperor of the universe. Hey, that socially works, you know? It's to an advantage, right? So, therefore, from the Vedic concept, it doesn't matter where you apply it. If someone has the ability, they can do it. They don't have the ability, of course, then it's not going to work out. But he has the ability. He's a Kshatriya. He's Uttanapada's brother. So his brother was managing the universe, so naturally he could manage the universe. Why not? Right? The same stock. They're both sons of Swayambhuvamanu, right? Grandsons of Lord Brahma. So the qualification's not a problem, but he can use it both ways. He can use it both ways. Also, an unknown element is, if you can actually work properly with women, you can actually work properly without them. It's an unknown fact. Right? So therefore, you can see, is because he can function so well in that element of renunciation, he can be a good grihastha. And if he's a good grihastha, he can manage the universe. Right? So it's just how you apply it. The principles are the same. It's just the broadness of it, that's all. So here then, Brahma's come to convince him, because he knows Narad Muni has also come there and is giving very convincing arguments on renunciation. Right? Because that's what Narad Muni does. Right? Narad Muni's brother has 10,000 sons. He goes and convinces them all to take sannyas. Right? You know, so that's what happens, right? And so then, you know, Daksha has another 10,000. He convinces them to take sannyas. Then he has 10,000 daughters, or not 10,000, 20, so many daughters. Then Narad Muni, okay, he's not going to convince them to take sannyas. So, you know. So we can see is that very personal, all these interactions. So here, Brahma's come. They've received him nicely. He's going to try to convince him to be a grihastha. Narad Muni has already been trying to convince him to remain as a brahmachari. And so, and Priyavrata, because he knows he can do that, but he's already doing this. So then it's the fun, as he points out, between grandfather and grandson, is that they have this kind of like mock competition. Right? It's not real, it's just for the fun of the interaction. Because you can do this here because you don't have the sense of possession. Right? The parent can't do that with the child because of the sense of possession. So the emotions get in the way. It has to be a little bit more formal. Right? It has the intimacy, but there's that formality. With the grandfather, you don't have that because it's not your son, it's your son's son. Therefore, you're technically not responsible. You're responsible for your son. That he's a good parent, but what the grandson does, that's the parent's business. That's his, if something's wrong, he has to take care of it, not the grandfather. So the grandfather can be much more relaxed with the grandson. So that kind of interaction then we see is happening here. But he's doing such a good job of it. One, he is a grandson. He is doing an excellent job of his renunciation and austerities and his devotion. That Brahma wants to recognize that, but now he just wants him to transfer that and use that in the grihastha ashram properly and manage the universe, because that's the need at present. Any questions or comments? Yes. Here's somebody.
Haribo, can proper form ever give rise to proper attitude? I'm thinking particularly in the case where someone said to Prabhupada, I don't feel like bowing down to you. And then Prabhupada said, do it anyway and you'll feel eventually.
Yes, that's why the sadhana is there, because sadhana means you don't have the attitude, because if you had the attitude, you wouldn't need the sadhana. So the sadhana is those practices by which you can develop the proper attitude, proper understanding, proper goal, everything. But The important thing is what wasn't discussed here, because it's, you don't get much better association than Narad Muni and Lord Brahma and Swayambhuva Manu. So the element of association's not coming up here. So it's association, just like the devotee follows all these things in good association, it develops bhakti, it develops the right attitude. But the smarta does exactly the same thing, but it doesn't develop the right attitude. So association's really the key. Like that. But sadhana, like you're saying, means you're following the form and function, and then, but you're hearing about the right attitude. So it's just a matter of practice that today I applied it, the attitude wasn't wrong, so I contemplate how to improve it, so then I try again. And you just keep at it until it comes. So it will come.
Okay, and conversely, can form sometimes overcome the right attitude? In other words, you enter into the household life and you say to yourself, I'm going to be very detached. But then you enter into it and you find that's not so easy.
Yes. No, that's there. That's why the situation has more things happening. See, it's like if you have just a few things, it's very easy to focus. Right? You just have a couple of possessions and all this. But when you have, and so you can take care of them nicely, see them in connection to Krishna, you know exactly they only have this function in your devotional life. But in grihastha life, then so many things are there just in case. You know, so many extra things because the element of security and all those aspects. So then so many more things that can be distracting. But that's why then the same thing, practices and the good association are continued, because those are the main elements. And then with time, one is able to by practice, become good at it. But it just, you know, it takes some time. You know, brahmacharya, you know, it has its time to get good at it. And then grihastha life has its time. Is that okay?
Sometimes, ISKCON, when people are having, men are having trouble with brahmacharya, and then they're advised to marry. But it seems by listening to your lecture that they're the worst people to get married. The people who are having really are excellent brahmacharis, they're the ones who should be married.
It's the means you have tradition means in the practice you have two kinds of brahmacharis. The naistika brahmachari, which we're familiar with, which we take that as brahmachari. What we don't really know about or understand is the concept of what's called the upakurvana brahmachari. Upakurvana means he does the same practices in the same environment, gets the same experience and knowledge as the naistika, but he understands in the future he will get married. You know, it's just like, let's say, you want to become a doctor, so you go to school. It's not that, you know, as a kid you decide to become a doctor and then next thing you know you're, you know, putting on your scrubs and stuff. You know, it's just, it's there has to be the training, but the training's the same. The training is how to deal with the material energy in a way that you are engaging the senses in connection with the Lord. That's the point. Now it's just a matter of whether you're comfortable to do that in the more simple environment of the brahmachari, or you are more comfortable in the more elaborate environment of the grihastha. So upakurvana knows, I want to get married, but not now. I should get educated. I should get trained. So then if that's understood, then when people join the ashram, they're trained in brahmacharya, right? And then they know that it can be applied as naistika and as upakurvana. But in either case, the practice is exactly the same. So the point is let's say the person is not doing so, he needs to get married, but he needs to be good at getting married, so he can be getting married. Now, for someone like that, if they know they can get married, they'll calm down. So that's the Vedic system. Let's say the person is, you know, been around a little while, but hasn't really seriously applied himself. So let's say 2 years and then he'll be really, really good. So the point is therefore, for 2 years, you practice very pakka brahmachari. Then after 2 years, then we'll look at marriage. You know, because then you'll be ready for it. So if after 2 years, now that you have the qualifications, now you want to get married, then it'll work. So that's how upakurvana works, is that there's a time frame. Naistika means there's no time frame. But we run on, there's no time frame. You're a brahmachari forever until you don't make it as a brahmacharya. But then the mind gets agitated. Just like, let's say, today's not a fast day. Okay, so breakfast is going to be at a particular time. Let's say something comes up and you get busy and you kind of miss breakfast. You don't actually, the mind doesn't become disturbed. But now if you know it's a fast day and there is no breakfast, you become disturbed. You understand? So that's why in the Vedic system, the point is that everyone practiced brahmacharya. Because that's generic. Now, after some time, as they mature, then it's a matter of, do you want to continue this or do you want to get married? In other words, you need a certain amount of time to become good at being a brahmachari. And once you've got the qualification, then you can either get married or remain as a naistika, depending upon your attitude and the situation. Does that make sense? So if that's understood, then you can actually train nicely the brahmacharis, because it's the same training. So even if it's, let's say, okay, you know, just done this, you know, finished your, you know, education and like to put in some time as a brahmachari, then there should be a certain amount of time that's required, that's how much time is necessary to actually become good trained as a brahmachari. You know, so many years like this. Someone doesn't make it, that's another thing. But at least you know that this many years is minimum. You know, so let's say, just for example, let's say like, you know, 5 years would be ideal, but you know, 3 years is okay. So then you can see by their background, their nature, it says, okay, the person's more, you know, okay, do it for 5 years and we'll look at it, you know. But if someone, you're not quite sure, then okay, let's do it for 3 years. And if it's good, then we'll go to five, then you get married. If not, get married at three. Right? So then it works. It can focus. You know, if you're doing something for a short time, you can do it really well. Just like you can stay up all night, you can fast because you know it's Janmashtami, because you know the next you will eat. Right? You know that after that, you know, you go take a nap. So you can do it. But if it's a matter of you're going to do that and just keep doing that until you can't do it anymore, then probably no one will make it to midnight. You know, so that's the Vedic concept. So it's just a matter of maturity, of understanding how the ashram works at its best. Then the brahmachari ashram isn't a matter of, oh, you know, they're not, they're not being real or not being honest or, you know, things like that. No, it's a matter of this is just what training you require. It's just like someone in medical school, they're not a doctor. Who said they're a doctor? But you say, hey, get real, you're not a doctor. What are you doing this thing? Go do something else. You know, why are you doing this education? You could be out, you know, selling hot dogs or something. You know, it's like that. So do something practical, but that's not actually the attitude. The attitude is of course they're not, but they're in training. Like that. So that's traditionally how the brahmachari ashram works. So it works very nice if you have that understanding and attitude. So the point is, but the attitude is, whether one remains a brahmachari or grihastha, it doesn't really matter. It's the point of these essential points of value of spiritual life, knowledge, renunciation, bhakti, austerity. These are the essential points, because that's what you require to either remain a brahmachari or to remain as a grihastha. You need them both. That's the basic qualification. Like that. Does that make sense? If someone has that attitude, then they can train brahmacharis nicely. Because if they see the tendency towards grihastha, great, but not now, later. You have to get trained. You know, it's like, if you're not respectful, how you'll deal with your wife properly? Women are, that's what it mentions in when it's dealing with Urvasi. Urvasi and what was the king? Yeah, Pururavas. The point in there is that she says women are insulted very easily. So that means you always have to be able to deal with the proper respectful attitude. You don't have it, they don't like it. So, you know, so punks are great to hang around with in a party, but you don't marry them. You know? It's just like that. They're fun, but you don't marry them. You know? If he doesn't have, if he's not clean, women don't like people who are not clean. Right? Brahmachari has to be clean. He has to know cleanliness because he deals with the deity worship and all these things like that. He has to have knowledge. You don't have knowledge, women don't respect. If you're an idiot, they don't respect. Right? If you don't have a service attitude, they don't respect because they expect you to do things. Results come from work. Women know that. Men may or may not know that, but women know that. So they want a man who works, who's willing to work hard. You know, he's respectful, he deals nicely in that, he's humble, right? So therefore, you know, when she's having a bad hair day, he can handle it. Because if you're not humble, you can't handle it. Like that. They also, they know the tradition, they dress according to their position. And so, if he can dress properly as a brahmachari, he can dress properly as a grihastha. So all these things are necessary. Right? Control of the senses. If you can't control your senses, women don't respect a man who can't control his senses. Right? Like that. Because there's nothing to do. If he's controlling his senses, then it's worthwhile trying to distract him. But if his senses are uncontrolled, what's the effort? You know, one look, the guy's finished. So where's the challenge? Right? You know, so where's that dynamic? You know, the battlefield of love. That's what the whole thing is. That, therefore, everything required to be a good brahmachari is exactly what's required to be a good grihastha. Right? Does that make sense? So focus goes on occupational skill. But the point is you don't live with occupational skill. You live with the person. So they have brahmachari qualities. Then they'll be a good grihastha. Like that. Does that make sense? So if that's understood, then the whole concept of training brahmacharis then becomes more refined. Right? So the basic principle that, you know, that devotees have is good, but it's not broad enough. It's a start, but it's not broad enough, you know? Because the first few months, you know, that kind of stuff, it works. But, you know, after 6 months or after 2 years, then you need something more. You need the culture and all that. Then they can see the purpose of it. Then they can... Because otherwise then, okay, I was a brahmachari and I didn't do so well. And these other guys, they were my friends and they were brahmacharis. But, you know, they would do a little better but not so well. And I get married. And then they're, you know, saying, you know, then I feel socially bad because I didn't quite make it as a brahmachari. Same time I know their weaknesses. So, hey, let's all get real here. So I'll have to establish myself by putting them down to put myself up socially, because now the brahmacharis are socially up. So if I put it the other way, then I'll be socially up. But at the same time, is they may point out my faults, I'll point out their faults. So it just turns into a political mess. It's not real grihastha, real brahmachari. It becomes political. Well, grihastha's not it's supposed to be ashram. Varna is social. Ashram is spiritual. So we tend to apply, because we don't separate varna and ashram, we tend to apply the social elements onto ashram, the spiritual. Which we're supposed to do it the other way around. We're supposed to apply the spiritual onto the social. Does that work? Okay. Thank you. Yes. Someone can take the mic over. What's that?
Hare Krishna. His question, I have an instructive little story, short one.
Oh, okay, very nice.
Trivikram Swami told me this. He was Prabhupada's servant in London in, I don't know what it was, 68, 69. And he was massaging Prabhupada's head. And Prabhupada told him, "So Trivikram, you will not take a wife?" And Trivikram emphatically said, "No, Prabhupada." And Prabhupada said, "Why? You do not like the ladies?" So Trivikram said, "No, Prabhupada, I like them too much." So Prabhupada said, "Then you should immediately take sannyas." And he gave him sannyas. Just, you know, I don't know, traditional instruction, whatever. But I have a small question about attitude. Of course, I saw some guy walking down the Temple Road the other day, had a t-shirt that said, "I got attitude." But most devotees
that's the t-shirt has the attitude. there's a t-shirt that one of our laborers wears. You know, the laborers, they wear these t-shirts, they don't know what they say. Yeah, so it's got this like pie chart on there. And on the pie chart, it's got the maximum is, and it's got like a few degrees of the chart, how they cut and pull it out. And it says, it's talking about his attractiveness. And so he said, the main part is the big part of the pie is the T-shirt. And the small little part is actually how much he's got.
Yeah. So most devotees, if you ask me, I'll tell you, I'll think to myself, my attitude's good. But sometimes, I'm thinking of a particular person, I'm not going to mention who it is in the ashram. But he thinks he has a great attitude, but everyone else thinks his attitude stinks, And even some GBCs spoke to him and, tell me your attitude's not. But he thinks that, so we all tend to think our attitude's very good. It's kind of like some kind of deluding function. So how can we really, understand? And so we have to, if you don't know your costs, you can't cut them.
Yes.
So
yes.
If we're all thinking we have a great attitude, it's very difficult to really develop one.
I guess the first thing is, if you think you have a great attitude, that's where you start. The one who thinks he has a great attitude, he's the one that doesn't have a great attitude, right? That's again, you came out in Prabhu's question is about the association. So Rupa Goswami mentioned associating with those more advanced than yourself, but that association is not for own social gain or your own experience and all that. It's so that you see what is their attitude. That's the most important thing you can actually pick up from senior Vaishnavas. Of course, you see their practice, but it's the mood that is more important. Like in the beginning, the new person will see the form because he doesn't know about attitude. And generally when they're new, they tend to have a little less attitude because they're new, so they don't have the skills. So then they'll see the activities and skills done by the senior devotees, which at that point may be everybody. But with time, they also have to see what's the attitude that they have, because they go together. So that would be one thing. So that's the main support of that, so that it's articulated, because you might not catch it from just watching. Therefore, we see is in all the various prayers by the great personalities in the books, and let's say the songs of the acharyas, the main focus is on attitude, like that, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Narottam Das Thakur, Rupa Goswami, all these Padyavali, Stavavali, and all these songs. They're all establishing what's the proper attitude. Because you have to get the balance. I'm the lowest of the low, but how am I the lowest of the low? Because, it's not about me. I'm lowest of the low because I'm not thinking about Krishna. Not, I'm lowest of the low, I'm so low, I'm so disgusting. So it's all still about me. Why lowest of the low? Because it means low is that it's material. Right? Then, material being done in the proper, sacrifice, austerity, charity, then that's high grade low. But then you're doing it for yourself. Now that's low-grade low. So therefore, that's lowest of the low. And then you can keep going from there. So these are the places then one should look. Because otherwise, say change the attitude, but then where to look? So that they know they need to change the attitude, the person should be intelligent and see, okay, something's wrong here. Why are all these Vaishnavas saying something? Then, if he can't catch it himself, then read from all the acharyas. Then they show the attitude, the prayers in the Bhagavad Gita, Kunti's prayers, Prahlad Maharaj's prayers, all these different prayers, Then they show what's the attitude. Then with that attitude, then you can apply Krishna consciousness nicely. Because if they're only talking about attitude, it must mean that person possibly has good skills, right? Is efficient in getting their services done. But the attitude gets in the way. So, therefore, he can improve the quality of his service by improving the attitude. It'll help. Does that work? Yeah. Is anything else? Oh, you mentioned it. This funny little speaker thingy.
Thank you, Maharaj, for a very, very beautiful class. I'm thinking in terms of attitude, one of the qualities of Srila Prabhupada, he was fearless.
Fearless, yes.
So powerful.
Yes.
So, what is being fearless, and how do we cultivate
it? How do we cultivate fearlessness?
Yeah.
What is fearlessness? How do we cultivate it?
And trust and fearless.
Yes, yes. The simple definition of fearless means that you are not afraid of your relationship with Krishna. You're not afraid of your relationship with the Supreme. See, because the problem comes is, if I'm not this body, I'm servant of Krishna, therefore the activities of this body on their own aren't that important. I'm afraid of that, because I do identify as the body and I want to do those activities. That's the root of fear. Then that'll manifest is that what goes with the body is what you call your security. So your home, your money, your social position, your service, you know, in the way of the status, you know, your friends, your support, all those different things. So actually fearlessness comes by being fixed in devotional service. So it's comes automatically by being determined to practice nicely Krishna conscious understanding. So it's one of those qualities that just comes naturally. Does that make sense? So it doesn't have to be specifically separately endeavored for, but as Shatadanya Prabhu pointed out, if you're not aware, right, means you can only correct something if you're aware of it. You know, if you don't understand you're sick, you can't take the medicine or change the lifestyle to adjust it. So if it's aware, but it's not a separate endeavor other than devotional service. That's the nice thing, is that whatever it is, devotional service is the panacea. Is that the word? Panacea for everything. But there's a technical aspect of the philosophy that shows how that particular problem is displaced in the philosophy. But just by doing the devotional service, it will cure all things. But if there's a particular weakness, then one can be more aware of it so that one is more careful. Right? To put a little more attention there. Because generally, where your weaknesses are where you're able to have the attention. Right? Because means where you have values, you're either going to apply them nicely or not, or favorably or not. You're not, I mean, something, let's say, you don't have any, let's say, particular value in walking, you just walk normally. You know what I'm saying? But if you have some value in walking, then it's a matter of you'll walk really nice, or everybody else walks all nice, so I'm going to be a, you know, slouch. Or, you understand? The positive and negative are going to be in the areas that you're actually able to be aware of. Right? So it's also not that, oh, here's something that's out of my capacity. No, it's within the capacity. But it's just also then the expertise, as was pointed out before, is that the senior men, when they're showing someone where the weakness is, then the ideal is that they can point it out in relationship to their nature and their values so that they can actually see how to apply it. Right? In other words, like in this other, there's some reason they have an attitude. The attitude is there, they have some value of it. They feel it gains something for them. So now if you can show that what they want is not gained through that particular attitude, then there's the inspiration to change it. Right? So that they have confidence in that, that's good. It's just the confidence is misapplied, so therefore we call that attitude. Right? Does that make sense? You know, in this case, a negative. Someone may have a positive attitude and very confident and all that, but no one minds it. Does that make sense? Like that. So it's just a matter of there's something technically wrong in their understanding between the field of activities and who they are and what goal they want. So their attitude that they're using is the wrong one. Does that make sense? Yeah.
How is that connected with the fearlessness?
How it's connected with?
Fearlessness.
Fearlessness. Because then fearless, that if it's like this. If you're not worried about social position, you don't mind preaching. You know what I'm saying? When we worry so much about political correct, this, that, no one preaches. The point is bold. Bold doesn't mean not humble. Bold means it's not me. It's the order of my guru. It's the teachings of the parampara. They're correct. So if I present that, what's wrong in that? You know, in other words, if I say, today's Sunday, you know, is there a problem? Because it's correct. So the thing is that political correctness means they think it's not correct. Because it's spiritually correct, but they want it to be politically correct, not spiritually correct. You understand? It's correctness, okay, but they're misapplying. Because otherwise, you wouldn't call it political correctness. You'd call it preaching. Right? Preaching is who you're preaching to. They have a particular nature and a field of activity, so you make the preaching relevant for them. So that means you use the words, you use the examples, everything that they can relate to. That's preaching. Political correctness, it's used in politics. It's not a lifestyle, it's an occupation. Preaching is a lifestyle. They're two different things. They have no connection with each other, you know, from that standpoint. Right? You know what I'm saying? So fearless means you're not afraid. You can engage the body because you're not the body, but doesn't mean that you do things the body can't do, that you're not the body. Right? I'm not this knife, so therefore I can use it as a sledgehammer. No, it's a knife. I'm not the knife. I use it nicely as a knife. Right? If I think I'm the knife, can I use it nicely? Oh, no, it might get damaged by the vegetables or something. You know what I'm saying? No. So if we say I'm not this body, means that therefore I can look at the body exactly what it is and use it for exactly what it can do. We're not this body, so therefore the body can do anything. That doesn't make sense. I'm not the body means, okay, whatever the body is, that's how it means in people, the social elements that are based on the body, then that's where you're situated. The social things on intelligence or on the mind, that's where we're situated, or age or position or whatever it is. Right? So that's the Vedic concept. If you're not the body, then you can perfectly, you know, dress, talk, act according to your age and position. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's fearless. So fearless, you're not afraid of being a servant of Krishna and acting in that way. That will get rid of all the other material concepts of fearless. Because the point is security. Okay, let's say as a grihastha, we've worked, we've gotten money. You know, we've kept some for emergencies, we're using it for maintenance, we're giving in charity, we're using our money nicely. Something goes wrong, you know, and so we lose our emergency money. But the point is Krishna ultimately is who's going to take care, and we're not the body anyway, so we do our best to take care of it, but the soul's going to go on. You know what I'm saying? So then you can, and then if opportunity comes up, you create again your, you know, facility. And if it doesn't come up, then hey. Does that make sense? So it's just, in other words, that proper application of the philosophy and culture then makes it, that's what creates the security. The real security is I'm eternal and I'm servant of God. I have a relationship with Him. And the reason I've taken up devotional service because God actually has gone out of His way to bring me into contact with it. And He's doing that not because He's a control freak, like that. He's doing it out of His affection for us. Right? So that's why these points are brought out about the affection of Brahma. Otherwise you could say He's the Lord, you know, Lord of the universe here, you know, and all that. And so Priyavrata as His grandchild should do what He says. No. It's a matter of there's still a relationship. Yes, you should do what He says, but there's a relationship. So the point is we follow God, but we follow God because we like to follow God, because God's a nice guy. You know, in its pure sense of the term. Because otherwise, nice guy can also mean a detrimental, right? So he's a nice guy that does well with the girls, right? Yeah. So. not sure where the what do you call it, started. Yeah, no, I'm thinking we should finish because what do you call it, has started the... No, doesn't seem to be happening. That's the problem with being a nice guy, right? Hare Krishna. Okay, at least it's I guess here we'll do one thing. We'll end the class now because there's time for that. And then if you want to ask a question afterwards, then, okay? Jai. Dranjaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki.